Greetings and welcome to the AVOD. I'm Count Vargelon.
I am the Dais Mistress.
And today on the AVOD, we've got something a little different for you. After weeks of dedicated preparation, we have just individually gone and seen the film Friday the 13th. And now, without having any conversation about it before this podcast, the Dive Mistress and I are going to react to the film while it's still fresh in our minds. Just a warning, this is going to be very in-depth about the plot of the film, so if you haven't seen it, be warned, nothing but spoilers. And B, it's going to be a little long, but we promise to try and keep it below the length of the actual film.
I'm particularly insistent on this point.
This is a point that has been forced upon me by my co-host, but I have agreed to her terms. So, I know we should have discussed this earlier, but since I didn't want to say anything about the film until we were actually on the air, who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Can I make my capsule comment before you go first?
Okay.
From now on, and henceforth, I will only refer to this film by one title. Do you know what that title is?
Which is?
The Texas Jason Massacre.
Oh, God. I should have seen that coming.
Wow. Wow, wow,
anyway.
Wow. So that is my capsule comment. Please.
Okay. So I'll start with a brief summary of the plot, such as it is.
Okay.
Okay, so the film begins in black and white in 1980 because the world was in black and white in 1980.
I think we all know that about the world.
With a girl running through the woods with a machete. Her t-shirt says Camp Counselor on it. And she's being chased by Pamela Voorhees.
Yeah. Played by?
And the only reason I know her name is Pamela Voorhees is because I happen to know a lot about Friday the 13th. You wouldn't know unless you're a big geek like the Count and I. Anyway, not important. She gets chased by Pamela Voorhees through the woods in black and white. They have a bit of a showdown. Pamela Voorhees about some kind of nonsense about her being responsible for her son's death. And then the girl chops her head off and runs away. So Pamela Voorhees' body falls to the ground, along with a locket that she was wearing around her neck, inside of which is a picture of her. So this locket's lying on the ground, and this little kitten comes and picks up the locket. So Jason is a child in 1980 when our story begins. Fast forward to present day, and there's a group of friends who are hiking in the woods. And they're looking for a hidden pot crop, which they find. And that night, one of the guys tells a ghost story about Jason. Although I actually am already kind of fuzzy on the details. He tells a story about Pamela Voorhees going to be headed. And then, because she blamed camp counselors for her son's death. And his name was Jason. I don't actually remember anymore if Jason does, in fact, kill people between then and now.
There were rumors that people had disappeared, but there's no clear kills attributed to Jason. And he tells a secondhand kind of friend-of-a-friend urban legend story that when a friend of his was going to camp in this area, the cops came around to warn them about Jason.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't remember that at all. Anyway,
it happened.
So he tells a ghost story about Jason. It happened. Then everybody sort of wanders off to do their own thing. Two people go walking in the woods, and they come across Jason's childhood home, inside of which they find a locket. And then the boyfriend mentions to the girlfriend that he thinks she looks like the woman in the locket, i.e. Jason's mother. We can all see where this is going. They get attacked. And the girl runs back to camp, and everyone at camp is dead. And then we flash forward to 6 weeks later, and Jared Padalecki is out looking for his missing sister.
That would be the other guy from Supernatural.
The one who I was confused about. I'm not confused anymore. Jared Padalecki is hot. I'm going on the record with that one.
And can I just point out, this is a weird aside, yeah. I just want to point out, is a giant. Like, he's really tall. Like, they kept having to cut, like, they kept having to awkwardly edit the fact that the jerk jock character is, like, 6 inches shorter than he is. And they had to cleverly film it so people wouldn't notice that Jared Padalecki is as tall as Jason.
He's not that tall.
He's that tall.
Derek Mears is really big.
So look at the two of them he's together. Not, but anyway, you know what? I'm getting off your recap. Please continue.
Okay, so to continue, Jared Padalecki runs into Trent at a gas station. Trent is a huge asshole. also a frat boy. So there you go. And then Trent and his crew are off to his cottage, which is more like a house. In the woods for a fun weekend. Trent's crew includes an Asian guy, a black dude, Dick from Veronica Mars, and three hot chicks.
Playing Dick from Veronica Mars.
Yeah, it's the same character.
He does not enjoy having a range.
Well, you play your strengths. So Jared Padalecki spends the rest of his day wandering around Crystal Lake, talking to random people, asking them if they've seen his sister. He meets an old woman who, for some reason, knows that his sister's dead and knows all about Jason and tells Jared Padalecki that Jason just wants to be left alone. Okay, thanks. meanwhile, Trent and his friends are trying to enjoy themselves at the cottage, but Trent's just such an asshole, he makes it really impossible for people to enjoy themselves. And then what happens? Day turns to night. Jason kills some people. Jared Padalecki and one of the hot chicks runs away. They find their way back to the camp. They find rather important thing. They find his sister, who is alive. Jason didn't kill her, and he chained her in the basement. So they rescue the sister. You can tell I've kind of lost interest in this, because now things are getting really disjointed. And what happens? Hot chick dies. Jared Padalecki and sister survive. Kill Jason, throw him in the lake. And, of course, in true Jason fashion, at the very end of the movie, right before the credits, he jumps out of the water and attacks. The end. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to point out that that is, in fact, the plot of the film. I'm not going to deny that. But in describing the plot of the film, it's amazing how, like, you miss all of the details that make this, well, I'm going to say it, a terrible movie.
Truly awful?
Terrible.
Yeah, I did. I laughed so much out of there. Because you know what? I started off really detailed there. And then as I kept going, I kind of stopped caring.
Okay, and I'm going to, before we get started.
Actually rather.
Hey, before we get started about the movie proper, I just want to ask you a question. It's not really a philosophical question, but it is a bit of a think piece. Did you ever imagine that you would live in a world where a My Bloody Valentine movie was better than a Friday the 13th movie?
No.
But that is what happened, isn't it?
Kind of. But My Bloody Valentine, wait, let me qualify that.
Okay, please.
My Bloody Valentine is the only reason it's better than Friday the 13th, 2009, is because of the 3D.
No, there's another reason.
The story.
No, there is another reason.
It's badly written.
The other reason is that you can see what's going on in the movie My Bloody Valentine 3D. Oh.
I know, that's true. Fucking shaky cam, I'm telling you.
Actually, can I tell you my theory?
Stop that.
I actually have a theory about it. I figured it out. Okay. Something like 20 years ago, Michael Bay, I don't know if he was in a skiing accident or a scuba accident or a race car accident. But, you know, something happened where he almost died. And he was rescued by a heroic guy with cerebral palsy. And he, being a rich Hollywood... being a rich Hollywood guy, he said to this guy with cerebral palsy, I will do anything to make your dreams come true to reward you for saving my life. And the guy said, I've always wanted to be a cameraman for action movies and, like, film action scenes in movies, but because I have cerebral palsy, no one will let me. And he said to this man, if I ever direct and produce a movie, you know, no matter who's filming it, no matter who's directing it, no matter who's shooting the camera, I will make it so that you can come in and hold the camera during all the action scenes. And that's what happened.
Oh, see, my theory is that Michael Bay is ADHD. Well, and that accounts for the shaky cam and the terrible editing.
See, that would account for the editing, but I don't think it would account for the shaky cam.
Oh, yeah, he just can't sit still.
Okay. You couldn't tell what was happening.
That made a long take.
Oh, my God. You couldn't tell what was happening in 80% of that. No, like, anytime something slightly action-y was happening.
I know, and for a movie where so much of it is based on the action and the violence.
Yep.
I mean, let's face it, that's how we're going to see the movie to begin with.
Yes, it is.
To not be able to follow the action and the violence on screen, I feel kind of like I've been cheated.
Yeah. I mean, if I wasn't going to ask for my money back anyway because the film was out of focus, I would have asked for my money back because the film was incoherent.
Like, not just, I mean, this has nothing to do with the story. This is
no.
just simply a filming of the movie.
Oh, absolutely. Like, just basic storytelling
done.
Technique. The ability to visually tell a story was just awful. But when you're dealing with the entire production crew of the movie The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, what the hell else were you expecting?
I don't know. I should have, and... Yeah, I mean, I did. I set the bar low.
You did.
And I still was a little
disappointed. Well, for me, I didn't know going in. Like, I knew Marcus Nispel, right, was the director. So I knew I hated the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But I knew he was the director. But I thought, you know what, maybe he's learned some things from Pathfinder or whatever. But then I found out it's also being shot by the same cinematographer and all the producers are the same and the production people. Like... He went back to Texas and said, let's hire all the same people who made that awful Leatherface movie to make an awful Jason movie.
Yeah.
Wow, was it
yeah.
just god-awful.
Well, okay, so let's...
Okay, let's start.
Let's maybe explain a bit more.
Please.
Getting away from how it looked. Let's maybe go on to some of the other problems that we have with the movie. Not least of which, this is like the one of the first really big problems.
Okay.
The fact that he didn't kill the sister. What
I know.
The hell? What is up with that? Oh,
well,
God.
I know. I mean, because the film was trying to be like this weird conglomeration of Friday the 13th 1 through 4, because it's got... The, you know, the little flashback to one, it's got the idea of him mistaking someone from his mother from two, it's got the teens going away to the family cabin from three, and it's got the guy looking for his missing sister, or in this case, in the original, dead sister from four. Like, they took all the parts they liked out of the first four movies and kind of crammed them into one experience. But the idea that he would kidnap a woman and keep her in his underground bunker... Because she kind of looked like his mother? Because when he was about to kill her, he said, wait, that's my mother's locket. And he managed to stop his machete swing 1/1,000,000th of an inch before cutting her in two?
I know.
Oh. And by the way...
Like, I know, it's really hard to know where to start with that one.
Over the course of this film...
Completely...
Sorry. Over the course of this review, I'm going to be reminding you that Jason is not a number of things, okay? But you know what the first
well,
thing Jason is not?
Say.
Jason is not the Viet Cong. Why does he have a warren of underground tunnels with, like, tripwires that goes to bells when he hears someone upstairs? Is this the people under the stairs?
They've completely changed the Jason character into something that he isn't.
Yes, they've changed him into Leatherface.
Jason is unknowable.
Yes.
Like, be he human or zombie,
yeah.
for lack of a better term. He is a completely unknowable character.
That is correct.
But we spend a lot of time with Jason in this movie. And we spend a lot of time with Jason alone, where he's supposed to be his most comfortable and truly himself.
Yeah.
When no one's around him and there are no distractions. And this it's, I guess, a way for us to get to know the character more, when in fact, we shouldn't know anything about him. Because as soon as we cross that line and get to know him as a person, then we take away the like what makes him so terrifying. We take away that unknowable quality a little bit. And then when you throw
bit?
In this shit with his mother, that like it takes it into a whole new level where we see that he is possessed of human emotion, that he has this attachment to his mother that he never got over, and is in fact capable of some kind of mercy or compassion.
Well,
in
it's,
fact,
well, well, to be fair,
none
it's not really it's not really mercy or compassion because he was actually it's not like he was having compassion on her because she looks like his mother. The intent is that he's keeping around because he thinks it might actually be his mother, and he's not very smart.
It doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter. No, it ruins it in any event.
Yes. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, you're totally right about
so
that.
So once you make your monster, once you take your inhuman character and humanize him,
yeah,
like that's, you know, that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Oh,
that's,
is it
you
ever?
You get this trickle-down effect where everything that follows from that is tainted.
Oh, my God, I know.
And when you have a character like Trent, who's such a complete asshole,
yeah.
all of that... You know, the revulsion and fear and abhorrence that you're supposed to have for Jason gets transferred onto Trent.
Yep.
And you spend the entire movie waiting for him to die.
Yeah.
So you're split now between Jason and between Trent.
Yep. Now, the thing is, every now and then in the original Friday the 13th films, there was a kind of... There was kind of a loathsome character who every now and then you wanted to see dead. But the thing is, in this film, Trent is treated like he's more of a villain than Jason. And at first, it just seems like, you know, bad screenwriting where someone told the screenwriters that there has to be conflict in every scene. So they're like, well, how can we add conflict to these scenes of people hanging out in a cabin? And someone said, make one of the guys just a complete dick. Right? Just to add conflict to scenes. But then as the film goes on, you realize he has no character beyond just being a dick all the time. You realize the filmmakers actually see him as kind of a villain, which is insane when Jason is out there cutting people in half.
Yeah.
Oh,
exactly.
My God.
It's unnecessary, and it's bad. It's bad writing.
Oh, it's terrible writing.
Boils down to.
It's god awful writing, and right from his first appearance, where you know Jared Padalecki is trying to put up a poster of his probably dead sister in a grocery mart, and the guy is a complete dick to this grieving man for no reason.
I know.
Like.
Oh, it just drives me crazy. And then what are these people doing hanging out with him?
Well, he's rich.
Why does he have these friends who seem like, you know, nice, good-hearted people?
For the most part, yes.
Like, I mean, maybe they're just using him for his cottage.
Possibly.
It's entirely possible. I think one of them actually does say something to that effect.
Yeah.
He pays off to be his friend.
Yeah, the Asian guy, when he's having his weird soliloquy inside the tool shed. Like, apparently they found him hilarious, because they keep going back to him wandering around the tool shed forever, making jokes and being wacky.
Well, it was kind of funny.
But it's like, it's only a 90-minute movie, and you're going to spend three of them with a drunk Asian guy wandering around a tool shed.
Well, we were about to see the black guy jerk off to a Lands End catalog. So,
yeah.
You know.
All of those scenes of people, like, trying to find pornography and planning to masturbate, what is that doing in this movie? Because it's not like that just happened, like, once. That was two separate scenes.
It happened twice.
It happens twice in the movie. Like, it's like they wanted to extra crude up all of the characters to make them more unpleasant and less likable. And I'm like, why are you trying to make me loathe the victims in a movie?
Exactly. You're supposed to sympathize for them.
Yes, you
but
are.
Instead, you're just waiting. I mean, and okay, you're going to see a fucking Friday the 13th movie.
Yeah.
You know you're just going to go, it's like, a parade of murders. You're just going to watch people die.
Yeah.
But you still, like, you want to feel some kind of empathy or sympathy for
you
these characters.
You won't feel scared.
Even though you're waiting for them to die.
Yeah, but you won't feel scared for someone in danger if you don't like the person who's in danger.
That's like
emotional filmmaking 101, and it totally escaped the makers of this film. Oh my god, and the weird part is, it's from the writers of Freddy vs. Jason, and if you look at Freddy vs. Jason, you know, everybody in that film is kind of likable. Like, the only human villain in the movie is the dad, and he disappears from the last act.
Exactly. No, it's a good movie. It has good characterization. The script holds together. The internal logic of the movie, there aren't any holes in it.
But we're not here to talk about a good movie.
No, we're not. Okay.
Okay, I just want to point out that...
in comparison to this movie, it's kind of like, I don't know what went wrong. It's like maybe it started off being pretty good and then someone else got involved and...
I would like to see an early draft of the script. I really would. But the funny thing with this movie is, right, I saw it with Merman, okay? And, you know, he's not as big of a Friday fan as we are, but he's incredibly close. Like, he's, if we're, you know, crazy level, he's just under crazy level, okay? here's what happened. We get to the movie, and I'm like, I turn to him, and we're like, what the hell did we just watch? Oh, my God. And he says to me, well, it's not Jason Goes to Hell, and it's not Jason X, but it is Jason Takes a Boat Ride. And he's like, that is the level that he puts this film at. The third, on par with the third worst Friday the 13th movie.
Yeah.
I think that is dead on. It was...
And like, I will. I mean,
tied for third worst.
Tied for third.
Yeah.
And I said this before. This is really nitpicky here. I'm
okay.
Really waving my deep flag.
You know that's what we're here to do,
trailer,
right?
I saw the trailer for this. I know. I saw the trailer for this when I went to go see My Bloody Valentine.
Okay.
And it was one of the long trailers that, like, counts up to 13, so you see every death.
Okay.
And I thought to myself, Jason doesn't move like that. I was prepared to hate the movie because I thought they just did a bad job recreating Jason for the big screen, and they just didn't get it right.
Okay.
He's just not like that. This is not how he works. This is not how he operates. And then I watched the movie, and he does. Like, okay, Jason at times can move very quickly and put a lot of force, you know, behind whatever it is he's using to stab you with. But the one scene where he throws the axe, I'm like, you gotta be kidding me with this. Like, no, I'm sorry. No, he doesn't throw.
No, he will throw a knife or a hammer if he's really close to you, but he threw that axe like 30 feet. And in six, he throws like a dart once. But actually, you know what I said when I was watching that scene right before he throws the axe? I'm like, well, I didn't actually say it because I didn't want to bother anybody. But I think to myself, I accept personally that Jason does in fact run. At times, I believe that he runs. Because he gets places fast. I get that. But I never want to see Jason run ever.
No.
It's like,
no, of course you don't.
You don't want to see the hollow table where the rabbit is inside when you're doing a trick, okay? On the same level, I don't want to see Jason run. I don't want to know how he gets there. I just want to see him get in front of somebody. That's it. Oh, but to see him like
I know,
scringing
exactly.
around? Oh,
Yeah,
dude,
it's awful.
completely. And yeah, although to be fair, I just want to point out, if this had been, an unrelated movie about Flace and Borgies, it still would have been a bad movie. It's just worse because it's about Jason. Okay? This
I
is not
know.
like we're just nerds saying, oh, well, Jason isn't like this, Jason isn't like that, blah, 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 blah. Some of our complaints are that, because you know what? Being fans of the le films to the level that, could be concerning to mental health professionals, we feel we have some say, some understanding of how Jason operates, and the film defies that and spits in that's face every chance it gets. So yeah, that's part of it,
Yeah.
but for the majority, it's just that it's god awful. Oh my God. It's like there's not a scene in this movie where something stupid doesn't happen. I love that a woman like essentially says to Jared Padalecki, I know for a fact that your sister's dead. There's a dude who kills people around here. He just wants to be left alone, and strangers don't know to do that, so sometimes he kills them. And then she like walks away and he's like, I guess I'll leave now. I won't try to get any more information out of this woman. Or the cop who said that we don't know anything, I won't tell the cop and bring him back out here to talk to this woman who claims to know who's doing the killing.
Yeah.
What? Don't have
Yeah.
that scene. If you don't want to open up all of these questions, don't have that frigging scene.
Meanwhile, never mind the fact that, there are people that Jason hasn't killed, like that old woman
Yeah.
and the old man who owns that barn full of shit in the wood chipper.
Yeah.
But for absolutely no reason whatsoever, not that Jason needs a reason, but in this context, maybe he kind of does.
He
He goes
does.
and kills the guy working in the barn with the wood chipper. It's like,
Okay, I was
well,
watching that
geez, that
scene.
guy's been living there for years. Why the hell did Jason choose right now to go kill this guy who's never bothered him before?
There's a line in there, and the weird part is, I'm like, what is going on with this movie that Jason seems so unusually possessive of that patch of marijuana? Because if you watch the movie, like,
Maybe it's just
I know, maybe it's his own personal stash is all I was thinking, because when I'm watching the movie, it's not like
off and people are getting in his
apparently
way, so he's just
at the beginning of the movie, right? If it were the strangers stumbling into his childhood home where he still lives that sent him in a murderous frenzy, I would understand that. But it's not. It's people arriving at the pot farm. That's what pisses him off. Seriously?
Well, did you see that pot? I mean, that is some
I'm not saying
major
it wasn't good-looking
serious
pot. I'm
shit.
saying he's Jason. He's not a Jamaican drug farmer killing tourists who wandered off of their, hiking path. Oh, my head hurts now. Just
Yeah,
thinking
it's
about this awful
weird. Oh,
movie.
so weird.
Like, why was he so possessive of that pot? Because then the mechanic guy, like, find the handyman goes and finds some pot, and this makes Jason want to follow him and kill him. Leading
Yeah,
to
it makes.
what top five dumbest scenes in that movie?
Although it is the scene that leads to him getting the hockey mask, so I
That's
guess
the
they had
scene
to
I'm
find a way
talking
to, like.
about. I considered him
No, I know
getting
what you're
that hockey
talking about.
mask.
I'm saying that they wrote that scene so he could get the hockey
Oh,
mask.
no, I get that, but I'm just saying, like,
I'm
the
not saying
actual scene of
that
him
it's
getting that
at
hockey
all
mask
acceptable.
is, like, the stupidest thing in that movie. Just the idea that, okay, here's Jason. He's gone to kill some random guy for no reason, okay? And then he, after killing him, during killing him, he gets the bag torn off of his head, right? And we get, like,
Yeah.
a half a second glimpse of the face makeup. One third of the way from the movie. There is no denouement demasking in this movie. We get a half second glimpse at the 25 or 35 minute mark, and that's it. Okay? And then
Yeah.
while carting the guy's body off, for who knows why, he sees that there is a hockey mask there, and he's like, maybe I should try this hockey mask on. Hey, maybe I should check myself out in a mirror to see how I look with a hockey mask. Checks himself out. I look pretty badass. And then he walks off. I'm like, I just watched Jason check himself out in a mirror. What is this?
Like, you want to make sure that shit looks good, all right?
No. But it's like,
I'm just saying.
Oh my God, this film, like no film since number six. And since we recorded that podcast, I figured out that this is probably one of the things you object to about number six. This film, more than any film since number six, is completely blasé about showing Jason for the entire length of the film. Like, he's just on camera, fully viewable, the whole movie. Walking around in broad daylight, we got a really good look at him. Like, all the time!
Yeah.
That's not how you treat a horror character, and it's not how you treat Jason!
I know. Like, that's scary.
For the love of God, Michael Myers, who wears a black suit, like a dark blue suit, spent an entire movie walking around in a hospital full of completely white halls where he would blend in, you know, like a snow leopard in a coal mine, right? And and you didn't get a good look at him once! Actually, I thought that was a pretty good simile as I was saying it, but okay. But anyway, like, and you never get a good look at him once. And that movie was directed by Rick goddamn Rosenthal. A complete hack. Okay. Oh my God. This movie. Like, the entire movie is just walking around. And can I point out something else? He used a bow and arrow.
I know! What the fuck? Not that, I mean, he's a really good shot. Yeah. But
no, but here's the problem with him using a bow and arrow. And I want to point out that when I did my ridiculously long review of that Jason comic book, one of the things I objected to most in that was him using, like, a crossbow, which is what I assumed he was using. But maybe it was supposed to be a bow and arrow then, too, which is just idiotic. But the idea, you know why Jason can't use a bow and arrow? And it goes along with your why Jason doesn't throw things, because it's just, it looks wrong for the character. Oh, by the way, the bow and arrow would have been more acceptable had we then not seen him standing there holding a compound bow.
No way.
But here's why Jason can't use a... let me just say, here's why Jason can't use a bow and arrow. Because if I see Jason use a bow and arrow, then I have to imagine Jason hanging out in the woods for hours on end practicing archery.
And axe throwing. Don't forget axe throwing.
Yes, and practicing throwing his axes. Like, Jason, like, that's the thing. If you've got a machete, you don't have to practice that. If you kick down doors, you don't have to practice that. Jason can just be a thing that does that. But no one is just good at arrow. No one is just good at archery. You have to practice to be able to hit a man on a speedboat speeding along away from you at 100 yards. Oh, my
God. Yeah, but, okay, the other more... I guess, theoretical reading of this.
Please.
Is that Jason can't use a weapon that gets released from himself. So the fact that he uses a machete or any other kind of bladed or pointed weapon that he has to hold in his hand, is that the weapon is an extension of himself.
Right.
And for him, these killings are really personal because he's avenging his mother.
That's an interesting overreading.
And so to use anything like a gun or a bow and arrow or even just throwing the axe, he's releasing a part of himself with the kill, and it creates sort of like a generation of removal from himself and his victim. And if, you know, and Jason just, he's not that kind of killer. For him, the killings are really personal, and that's why he's always really close to his victim.
What you've said there is so, why I hate academia. Yeah.
That's why you love academia.
It's why I love academia. You beat me. You got me. No, but seriously. He fears.
Tell me I'm wrong.
No, I'm not saying you're wrong. Nobody's saying you're wrong.
Because I'm not.
He's shooting arrows in this movie. And then, oh my God, the ridiculous scene where they're all in a house and Jared Padalecki is like, Jason's coming to kill us. Okay, he doesn't know his name is Jason, but he's like, Jason's coming to kill us. And then, like, it never thinks, and it's like, black guy says, instead of running away, let's go and look for our Asian friend who is almost certainly dead. But anyway, but it never occurs to anyone during the scene to say, hey, do you have a weapon somewhere in this house?
Well, no, that's because Trent just runs off and gets his gun.
Only after black guy is killed.
A corpse.
But that's,
and then drops it in a pond.
I know. But that only happens after the black guy is killed. Like, why wasn't the first thought they had when they got there and, like, called for the police, do we have any weapons we can use to defend ourselves from this killer? Like, shouldn't that have been the first
also,
question?
Also, I mean, the other problem there, because Trent and Jared Padalecki hate each, well, Jared Padalecki doesn't really hate Trent, but Trent hates Jared Padalecki.
Yeah.
And is disinclined to believe anything that he's got to say. So when Jared Padalecki shows up and he's like, there's a killer in the woods, we all have to run away. Trent's not going to believe him. He's going to think he's full of shit.
But whether he believes...
And even though, even when he's presented with evidence that what Jared Padalecki said is true, he still resists accepting the fact that Jared Padalecki was right and he was
which
wrong. Because
is
he can't
ridiculously
be wrong
unbelievable. Because his girlfriend... You know, who he has no particular problem with, actually saw a corpse with a severed head. Like, it's not like this is a story someone's telling. She was there, she saw the severed head. Oh my God. Oh, and by the way, can I point something out here? And this is the only time I think I'm ever going to say this. You know, because okay. I shouldn't have to say it. But I'm going to say it right now. Jason.
All right.
Is not a cannibal.
No. Oh, don't even get me started on that.
The Texas Jason Massacre.
Did you see the ripoff from Wrong Turn? Oh, God.
Yeah, I did see that.
And that just leads right into cannibalism.
Yep.
Which just isn't true.
Oh, and here's another thing I don't want to ever picture Jason doing, okay? I don't want to picture Jason cleaning up after his crime scenes.
Yeah, no one needs to see that.
Like, it's like, are you expecting, because the cop says, we didn't find a car or any attempt, you know, any campground or anything like that, or any trace of them here around Crystal Lake. Which raises the question, okay... So he killed those people, then he, what, folded up all their tents, you know, buried the evidence of the fire, carted all their bodies away, and either ate them or buried them, and then hid their car somewhere? Do you know who Jason is? Because I don't think you know who Jason is. I think you know who the Leatherface family is, but I don't think you know who Jason is. Oh, and by the way, that
I
lake,
know, and
that
the fact that you even
looked...
see him carrying a body away, it's
oh
just,
my God.
It's what I said before. You just spend too much time with him.
Yeah, it takes away all the mystery.
You know.
Okay.
Exactly.
I'm
you don't
going.
Want that.
Oh, also the I just want to point out the stupidest moment. Okay, first off, that lake. This is why you don't film a movie in Texas, this kind of movie, because that lake was shallow and muddy and pathetic. Like, that's not a crystal lake. But anyway, so he shoots the guy in the boat, kills the guy in the boat, right? And the girl who was wakeboarding is too stupid to get out of the way of an oncoming boat. But after getting kind of bonked by the oncoming boat, right, she sees Jason standing on the shore. Now, there are two shores of this lake. One of them has Jason on it. The other one, a 5-minute swim away, does not have Jason on it. And while it would take you 5 minutes to swim there, it'll take him half an hour to walk there. Or run there.
Well,
she swims towards Jason!
Yeah, but you're forgetting the important part is that she's topless.
And by the way, that seemed oddly mean-spirited to me.
You think so?
Not the toplessness, but the fact that they kill her in such a way that after being killed, her breasts are dragged out of the water for one more look. That's what seemed mis-spirited. And remember how we talked all about how Jason is not creative and does not take pleasure in his crimes?
Yes.
What's he doing tying someone upside down over a fire while still alive?
Yeah, that seems... It's just like a little too much work.
Oh, and...
And that that's a bear trap!
It is a bear trap!
What the fuck?
Why is,
oh,
Jason
man.
Why is Jason using a bear trap, A? And B, how could he have known where that guy was going to run?
Well, maybe he took a cue from Severance. And there are, in fact, bear traps all over the place.
And the guy just happened upon one at the worst possible moment. Oh, my God.
Exactly.
Jason using traps? Oh, wow. At least there was one strategic... There was at least one strategic body placement, which was nice. I did enjoy that.
There was.
I did enjoy
that. That was exciting.
But at the same time...
I was waiting for it, too. I'm like...
I know. When's the body
going to
fall?
Gonna fall?
I know.
There it is.
But here's... And another from the files of... You really don't know who Jason is, do you? Jason climbs up onto the roof of their cabin. And then the... Camera work strongly suggests that he climbs through the window into the bathroom to sneak up on her, right? But the window that we see is about a foot open and has three bottles on it. Jason is 9 feet tall. So in order for him to sneak into the house, he would have had to open that window all the way, remove the bottles, climb through the window, put the bottles back, and then half close the window. And if he's doing that, he's not Jason. He's not Michael Myers, okay? Michael Myers would pull crap like that. Jason would just crash through the goddamn door. The man has never seen a door he did not want to crash through.
Yeah, I know. He does lack a certain finesse.
Oh, God. And can I point out the stupidest thing in the entire movie? And this is a movie full of stupid things. The surface of which we have just scratched. But Hot Girl and Jared Padalecki go running away from the cabin. And, okay, I want to point out, they know they're being chased by Jason, right? They're trying to get away from Jason. He has no reason to believe his sister is alive at all, right? In fact, given that Jason is now carrying around decapitated corpses, she's probably dead, okay? No reason. So their only goal in running away from the cabin, their cabin, is to get away from Jason. So where do they run? Jason's
house.
They specifically run to Jason.
The least likely place you would look.
What? Yes. They specifically run to Jason's house rather than anywhere else on Earth. Oh my
Although
God.
They actually don't know where Jason's house is, because they only went to the camp.
No, no. It, as
so
they're
it
running
is,
up to
it
Jason...
It is within the realm of possibility that they would run... If they just picked a random direction in which to run, they would end up at his
house. Ah, but you were listening
to
the dialogue.
I mean, it is likely to happen.
Because as they run up to the through the woods and up to the cabin, do you know what Jared Padalecki says? He says, I saw... This is the way he was heading earlier.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Why would you do that?
So, which means they were specifically trying to go towards Jason's hideout.
That's true. I forgot. I did hear that. And I'm like, well, then why would you go in that way? And I forgot that I thought that.
Okay. Okay. We should start wrapping it up soon because...
Gonna go on and on.
We have a couple of more things to talk about here. We don't have to wrap it up right now, but we have to... You know, consider easing it down. But I, before we do that, I want to talk about the end of this movie.
Okay.
Because as we talked at length about in the Jason AVOD, there are some bad endings to Jason movies.
Yes.
The majority of which turn out to have been dreams.
Right.
The ending of this movie... really, the way it's shot, in no way you can suggest it's meant to be a dream. Is that fair to say? I think that's fair to say.
That's fair to say. That's real. That really happened.
Okay. So you're Jared Padalecki and his sister. You're both of them. You have just killed Jason by...
Don't even get me started on that.
But you just killed Jason by strangling him and then grazing his mask with a wood chipper and then stabbing him somewhere in the chest with a machete. You have the good faith belief.
I think also the back of his head gets chewed up.
No, we don't see any blood fly from that, so I'm not saying that that happens. I'm not giving them that.
Okay.
All I ever saw were like chinks coming off the mask, so that's all I'm giving them as intent of happening there. Okay. But anyway, you, Jared Padalecki, and your sister, Girl from Murder Reunion, believe you have killed Jason. Now,
yes.
Then, your plan, what do you do then? Because apparently, according to the film,
throw him in the lake.
What they
what
do
else
is,
am I gonna do?
What they do is, they take Jason, who I want to remind you is 11 feet tall and 800 pounds, wrap him in a tarp, drag him a mile through the woods down to the lake, and then roll his body into the lake.
Of course.
What? That makes sense. Now, and of course he bursts back out, but here's my question. Now, if that plan had gone entirely according to their plan, what would they have done next? They would have gone into town, and gotten medical treatment for all their horrible injuries. And then the cops would have shown up because they were treating people for horrible injuries. Oh, and the cops would have found out about horrible injuries and the fact that a corpse was being dragged all around town on the back of that guy's, you know, tow truck.
Oh, yeah. On the back of the truck.
But anyway, so the cops would come up.
By the way, it was, like, terrible foreshadowing.
Oh,
I'll
God.
Have you know.
But anyway, so the cops would show up at the hospital and to talk to Jared Padalecki and his sister, Girl from Murder Reunion. And they would say to them, so what happened last night? And then be like, it's crazy. This guy, Jason Voorhees, killed, like, you know, all of our friends and these all of my friends and all of these strangers that my brother met. Okay, well, how did you get away? We killed him. Great, what'd you do then? We rolled up his body in a tarp, dragged it to a lake, and threw it in. And then the cop would say, why did you do that? And I believe that the writers of this film have no idea what the character's answer to that question would be. Because there is no possible way
to
justify that action. None!
They just have to get Jason into the lake. The film has to end with Jason in the lake.
Okay, if you want the movie to end...
This is the way they did it.
I hate to go back to my catchphrase, then... But if the only way you thought to have Jason get back into the lake is by having characters for no reason wrap his corpse up in a tarp and drag it to the lake and throw it in, then you are not writing hard enough. Go back and write the end of the movie harder. Set the end of the movie next to the lake, for God's sake, if you want to end the movie with him getting thrown into the lake. Don't expect the audience to accept that your characters will drag the corpse of the man who's been trying to kill them a mile and throw it into a lake.
Maybe some kind of cathartic action on their part.
A lake? Oh, so wait, stabbing him through the chest with a machete and half feeding him into a wood chopper isn't cathartic enough?
Not cathartic enough.
And by the way, it's a frigging lake that neither of those two characters knows that he has any association with.
I know.
Like, neither of those characters, like, we the audience and they the filmmakers, understand that Jason is a lake monster, right? But the characters don't know that.
Oh. They don't even know who he is. They don't know he's fucking Jason.
Yeah, she knows he's Jason.
Dude in a mask.
She knows he's a kid named Jason who was the star of a scary story she was told that she barely remembers. Okay? That's it. Oh my God, this movie. There's nothing good about this movie. nothing good about this movie.
I don't know. I would argue Jared Padalecki.
Oh, you're right. Good. No, but okay. You found him hot. And the thing is, I think he is his years of, you know, hanging out on Supernatural and the Gilmore Girls. He's a totally solid performer, and I totally believe his acting. But, oh my God, the terrible writing surrounding him. And it's not like I think any of the actors in this movie did a necessarily bad job. It was just such a stupid movie from beginning to end. So offensively dumb.
Well, oh. This is the other thing. Yeah. I mean, not that I'm complaining about Jared Padalecki.
Of course.
However, please. When you put a star like that in your film,
yeah.
You already know how it's going to end.
Yeah, that's a big problem. Because...
You know, unless you're going to pull some Deep Blue Sea shit and kill Samuel L. Jackson halfway through a big, important pep talk speech.
I love that scene. I know we all do, but I really love that scene. Okay, do you know why I love that scene? Because in the theater, I was sitting there, and the person I was with can testify to this. From the moment he starts talking, I started saying, "Why are you standing next to the pool? Get away from the pool. You know it's sharks. Why are you standing next to the pool? It's not like you think you're going to be attacked by robots who can't stand salt water, you know? You're standing in the one place the shark can get you."
I really like that movie.
Oh, no, it's a great movie. I am not complaining about that movie. But anyway... Back to a movie that sucks. No, but you're absolutely right. I mean, like, you put a star in the movie, and the two people who I have seen before in other things, as leads, survive the movie, well-ish, and the rest of the people who I have never seen before don't. You know? Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
Like, okay, maybe Amanda Rigetti, star of Murder Reunion, isn't as big a star as... Jared Padalecki, but you know, I had seen her before. But it's like, and I you know how I have my theory about how now they only ever want couples to survive? I turned to Merman in the theater. I whispered, the second like they find his sister, I'm like, well, that's it for the pretty girl. I'm like, you don't need three survivors.
And you can't have three. You gotta
have two. You gotta have two. No. Oh my God, this awful movie. I had no expectation it was going to be that bad. Like, I really didn't.
Yeah.
Oh,
I don't know. I just.
God.
I'm glad. Okay. To sum up.
Okay, please.
I will admit to being disappointed. But yeah. I am really glad that I went to see it.
Okay.
And I saw it on opening night.
Me too.
In a movie theater full of people who were all very into it. And they were yelling and screaming and shouting and clapping through the whole movie.
Good.
So it does, you know, it sort of adds something special to
Oh, hey, that was my experience with My Bloody Valentine. And yeah, it adds it. Having like 15 girls in the row behind you screaming every time something flies at the screen helps the movie immeasurably.
So, I was excited when he picked up the mask and put it on, not going to lie. You know, excited to see him kill people.
Yeah.
Trent in particular.
Okay, here's the thing. I mean, someone was asking me recently, right? You know, why are you going to, like... aren't you angry about the new Star Wars movie? Star Trek movie? And I'm like, yeah, I have no faith in J.J. Abrams' abilities as a storyteller or a film director, you know, or anything, right? That being said, it is a Star Trek movie. I will be happy to see Star Trek things happening on a movie screen. That's as far as it goes for me. In the same way, I mean, I've been very hard in this movie for the past hour, but yes, was I happy to see Jason? Of course I'm happy to see Jason. Was I deeply heartsickened to see their complete misunderstanding of the character of Jason? Yeah, but at least I got to see, you know, I could every now and then pretend it wasn't retarded and watch Jason, you know, kill people with a machete, because that's why I go. So I'm not saying there's not visceral thrills available in this movie. There are visceral thrills available in this movie. But you know what? There are visceral thrills available in almost having a car accident. There are visceral thrills available in... No, and okay, let's move away from that. But there are visceral thrills available in, you know, Jason X, too. And that's an even worse movie than this one. Like, the fact that it works in a packed audience full of kids because every now and then something looms up at the camera and there's a loud noise doesn't make it good.
Yeah.
Okay? And can I tell you, I'm going to tell you a brief story that I hope is on point, and if not, I'll have just humiliated myself. A friend of mine and I are walking out of a restaurant in Toronto, Yonge Street and Bloor, middle of downtown, right? And we're walking up the street, and the, and as we're walking up the street, three guys come walking out of the Sunrise Records. And just as these three guys, who are college age dudes, right, just as they're walking out, off to our, off to me and my friends, like, back and right, so we didn't see it, but right directly in their eye line, two cars almost hit, and so there was a screeching of tires and then a loud honking horn. And my friend and I were both startled by this, and the three guys reacted to the loud sound and movement of a screeching tire and a loud horn and an almost accident by shocked, then laughing uproarily and saying, "That's amazing!" And I turned to my friend and I'm like, that's who Michael Bay is making movies for. He is making movies for people who are entertained by sudden loud noises. And you will not find a better proof of that than this movie, Friday the 13th, from Michael Bay's production company.
On that note, I encourage you to, I guess, to Google or YouTube Michael Bay explosion, robot chicken vignette of Michael Bay's new movie.
Explosion.
Things blowing up.
Yeah.
It is gold.
Yeah, it really is. And before we move on, I want to point out, in all seriousness, something about the character of Jason that has always been in there in the films that was completely missing from this one, and I'm going to tell you what it is. Now, okay, I want to be as diplomatic about this as possible, because earlier you pointed out that Jason is unknowable, right? You know, like, we don't understand who he is, and that's part of his charm. But even though we don't understand who he is, right, and we don't quite grasp his motives or what it's like to be inside his head, he has had simple rules that he follows, right? And if you understand those rules, you cannot get killed by him. And there's even a nod to that in the movie, right? By the old lady saying he just wants to be left alone, blah, 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 blah. Right? But the thing is, how should I put this? If you look, Friday the 13th Part 2, he tracks down a chick and kills her because it's because she, right, because she killed his mom. But Friday the 13th Part 2, he doesn't kill anybody until they come to Camp Blood. And after they've come to Camp Blood, he goes and he starts killing, right? He follows them to where they are on his lake and kills them. That being said, doing so gets his ass kicked. And then in Part 3, he runs away from all the cops, and along the way, he finds people and kills people. Part 4, all he wants to do is get back home, and on the way, he finds people and kills people. Like, basically, the rule is, if you're between him and his home, he'll kill you. Yes. And if you're in his home, he'll kill you. Right? But other than that, you're pretty much okay. So my question becomes, like, let's say he considered that pot of that plant of marijuana, like that whole patch of marijuana, his home, his property. That's why he kills all the people at the beginning of the movie. Like I say, it would have made more sense if the thing that angered him was them going into his frigging house and stealing his property, which they do. But that isn't what angers him in the film. It's the pot. But anyway.
I don't know. I don't want to think that the pot belongs to him. I think the pot belongs to somebody else.
I know. Who he killed.
Who knows about it, because people going to find the pot know about the pot already.
Yeah, I know. That's not the point. I'm not.
What is Jason going to do with the pot?
I know. I'm exaggerating about Jason's feelings about the pot. Absolutely. I freely admit that. But I'm just using it. I'm saying the pot is a signifier of the boundary of where he lives, okay? Like I said, it would have been better in the movie had the thing that pissed him off be them coming into his house and stealing his mother's necklace, okay? Because that's kind of a justification for pissing off Jason. But he was already had already killed all their friends by the time that happened, so that's not the justification. Anyway, my point is, taking me a while to get there, I know. My point is, right, why does he kill all the people in their family cabin? Like, that's a family cabin that people built there. That's a retreat for the family that people go to all the time. And I'm sure they hop on that boat and take the boat around the river, all around the lake, all the time. Why is he killing those people? They didn't come to where he lives. They didn't interrupt his territory. Even the guy in the barn came to his marijuana patch. But, like, there's no logical reason for him to be killing these people at the lake. You see what I'm saying?
I guess once he starts, he just can't stop.
But he had already started, we assume. Like, these aren't the first people he's ever killed. Are they?
Well, the thing is, you don't really know.
Well, the old lady comes out and says, like, he's been there, you know, and people disappear because they go onto his property and don't know where it is. And she's clearly implying that his friends are not the first people to whom this has happened. Do you see what I'm saying? Like,
so you're saying Jason, like, he actually has no reason to kill the people in...
That's what I'm saying.
They never trespassed on his property.
That's what I'm saying. Within the rules of this, within the world of this movie, there are rules. And the rule is, if you don't go near Jason's territory, he won't kill you. They establish those as the rules, and then right away they break that by having him kill all of those people. You know? It didn't make sense to me. Anyway. Well,
I guess it goes back to the needing to write harder.
You know what? Yes. I think the whole film needed to be written a little harder. God. Okay. So I think that we can put that a capper on our Jason Arama, our four-part series about the Friday the 13th series, including a real-time review of the final film by people who just finished watching it. Thank you for watching. As always, you can read our blogs at vargelon.blogspot.com.
Zombox.blogspot.com.
And if
you can find the AVOD at theavod.blogspot.com.
If you have any questions, comments, or just want to hear your letter read aloud by people who aren't you on a vodcast, then you can reach us at theavod@gmail.com. Until next time, when we finally stop talking about Jason for a little while and move on to talk about Flaysen Borvies. The villain from our own film, Naked and Violent.
Naked and Violent.
Flaysen Borvies.
It's coming along.
Coming along nicely.
We'll have an update next time.
Honestly, this movie pissed me off enough that I am motivated to finish writing it. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Thank you for listening to the AVOD, and that's a good night from the Count.
And a good night from the Die of Mistress. Take care of yourselves.
And seriously, try to see a good movie next time.